It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. Thanksgiving is done, so we're on to the season of giving. Christmas, or for many people, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. So this morning in Your Health, NPR's Elise Spiegel decided to look at how giving and getting affects us psychologically. And she begins with the story of a man named Philip Kunz.
In 1974, Philip Kunz and his family got a record number of Christmas cards. In the weeks before Christmas, they came daily, sometimes by the dozen, and Kuhn still has them in his home, collected in an old photo album. Can you just read some of the Christmas cards that you have there?
Yeah, I have, Dear Phil, Joyce, and family, we received your holiday greeting with much joy and enthusiasm. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year's. Love, Lou, Bev, and the children.
The cards from that year came in all shapes and sizes, but the basic message was pretty much the same.
We received your lovely Christmas card. We wish you a very Merry Christmas, Betty.
The writers wanted Philip to know that he and his family were cared for and also wanted to share their own news. They included pictures of family members and new homes and smiling graduates with freshly minted diplomas, which all seems pretty normal, except for one thing. How many of the people who wrote you those cards, how many of those people did you know?
Didn't know any of them.
Philip Kunz is a sociologist, and earlier that year, he'd decided to do an experiment. He wanted to see what would happen if he sent Christmas cards to people he didn't know, total strangers. Would they write him back? And so he went out and got himself directories for some nearby towns and picked out around 600 names.
I started out at a random number and then skipped so many and go to the next one.
So you just picked them out of a book?
That's right.
To these 600 strangers, Kunz sent his Christmas greetings. And then Kunz waited.
It was just, you know, shot in the dark. Didn't know what would happen.
But about 5 days after he sent them, responses started filtering in. Slowly at first, and then more, until eventually they were coming 12, 15 a day. Kunz says he got well over 200 replies.
I was really surprised by how many responses there were. And I was surprised with the number of letters that were written. You know, some of them 3-4 pages long.
Why would someone send a 3-page handwritten letter to a complete and total stranger? Why did so many people write him back at all? Robert Cialdini is a psychologist. For years, he studied how our behavior is affected by social rules that we're only vaguely aware of, but which have incredible power over what we do. And what happened to Kunz, he tells me, is the direct result of one of those rules, the rule of reciprocation, a rule, he says, drilled into us as children.
You must not take without giving in return. You must not take without giving in return. You must not take without giving in return.
That is the rule of reciprocation. It is, he says, a very popular rule.
There's not a single human culture that fails to train its members in this rule.
This is probably because there are some obvious benefits to the rule of reciprocation. It's one of those rules that likely made it easier for us to survive as a species, which is why, Cialdini says, people who break the rule can get called all kinds of names.
Moochers or takers or ingrates or teenagers, actually, and no one wants to be labeled like that, so people will go to great lengths to give back once they've received.
But what's interesting to me about all of this is how psychologists can actually measure the way that this rule affects how we behave in all sorts of situations. Exhibit A, those little pre-printed address labels that come to us in the mail this time of year, along with letters asking for donations. These labels seem innocent enough, but they often trigger a very small but very real dilemma.
I can't send it back to them because it's got my name on it. And as soon as I've decided to keep that packet of labels, I'm in the jaws of the rule.
That packet of labels costs around 9 cents, but it dramatically increases the number of people who give to the charities that send them.
The hit rate goes from 18% to 35%.
In other words, the number of people who donate almost doubles. And you can see the same thing when it comes to tipping. If a server brings you a check and does not include a candy on the check tray, you will tip the server whatever it is that you think that the server deserves. But
if there is a mint on the tray, tips go up 3.3%.
Rule of reciprocation. And the researchers who did that work actually discovered that if, while delivering the tray with the mint, the server paused, looked the customer in the eye, and then gave the customer a second mint candy while telling them that the candy was specifically for them,
tips went through the roof. 20% increase over the normal tip.
Rule of reciprocation. Which brings us to this. This is the sound of a group of Hare Krishna chanters. Many decades ago, Cialdini studied Hare Krishnas in America, and he says that in the late 60s, the religion was really struggling financially. The problem was that the religion seemed strange to many Americans, so it was hard for them to raise money. But then they hit on a solution. In airports and in other public places, they would simply give the people passing by what they described as a gift, a flower, a book, a magazine. Then, after the person had the gift in their hand, they would ask for a small donation. Cialdini says he spent days in different airports observing these transactions, watching as recipients struggled to come up with the right solution.
You would see many of them with frowns on their faces reach into a pocket or a purse, come up with a dollar or two, and then walk away, angry at what had just occurred.
But they would give, Cialdini believes, because of the rule of reciprocation. For years, he says, the Hare Krishna religion raised millions of dollars this way.
Hare Krishna.
Really, there are dozens of other ways that the rule of reciprocation affects us. Some of them good, some of them bad. For example, politicians, like the rest of us, are subject to the rule of reciprocation. And so when organizations or interest groups give them money, though they might believe that money won't influence their decisions, it's sometimes hard for them, as it is for us, to be immune. Cialdini believes you can also see the rule operate in the medical profession,
where you'll find doctors more willing to prescribe medications based on what gifts, favors, and trips they have been given by one or another pharmaceutical companies.
Now, Cialdini is clear that the rule doesn't affect all of us all of the time, and different situations trigger different people differently. But it is powerful. One of those invisible, powerful things that can subtly shape how we behave, sometimes for years after someone has given us something. Consider Philip Coons, the sociologist who decided to send Christmas cards to random strangers. For years, he says, his family got cards from the people he had contacted in 1974.
We got cards for maybe 15 years, quite a few the first year or two, and then they started dwindling off, and by around 1990 or so, we didn't get any more cards.
So basically, you got cards from people that you didn't know for another almost 20 years?
That's right, yeah.
Elise Spiegel, NPR News, Washington.